let's get started, Robbie. You are our resident Rayo Vallecano expert. You've written a whole book about them. Rayo did play pretty well at the weekend. I don't know. It was a weird game because I think they may have deserved a result. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah, and it's kind of a difficult one to figure out because in that first half, Atletico were really poor, and I don't know whether that was by design or because Rayo were so good. And we kind of saw the same with Barcelona. They've got Lyon on Tuesday, and their first half was left a lot to be desired, I suppose, in their entire performance. So I don't know if Atletico figured that if they just conserved energy and kept Rayo at arm's length, they'd eventually get a breakthrough and a goal. It turned out that it was actually more difficult than they probably would have envisioned, but in the end they obviously got it through Griezmann. But the Rayo have been playing actually quite well this season. Mikel has switched to a back three, obviously. He was playing four at the back actually on Saturday, but he solidified them with the change in goals as well. Dmitrievski's gone in goals now, and they just look a whole lot more secure assured about themselves. And they probably don't deserve to be down in the bottom three, but against Atletico they look good, but they just missed that little bit of quality, and I think Simeone kind of knows that. And we were speaking just before we started recording here about an article I wrote, and that's what I said in that article, is that that Simeone has this knack for just boiling everything down, reducing risk, reducing the number of chances, and hoping that Atletico end up just having that little bit of quality to turn one of those chances home. And that's exactly what happened against Rayo. It's exactly what didn't happen against Betis. It went the wrong way for them. And it's not particularly fun to watch, but it worked for them in Vallecas on Saturday afternoon.
But it is effective. It's not at all pretty, but it is effective. Atletico's expected goals in this game, Robbie, 0.15.
I know, I saw that. And I actually just had a look about maybe an hour before we came online. Atletico, they're doing, and I was actually, something I was thinking about is their defence really as good as it used to be, or are they relying massively now on having the best goalkeeper in the world, like a kind of a Manchester United way? But it's just the way that it's framed, and that Simeone is a brilliant defensive coach. Is that still the case, or is it just that they're relying solely on Jan Oblak? And I'd be concerned that it's the latter, and that maybe the as a defensive back four, they're not as strong as they once were, and that could be problematic when they play Juventus on Wednesday night, which I'm sure we'll speak about later on in the podcast.
What, in your estimation, did Rayo do so well in this game? Raul de Tomas in particular I thought was brilliant, particularly in the first half, but watching them since the start of the year, there has been a pretty clear change. Michel changing systems helped, but what did they do so well to put Atletico under all this pressure?
Yeah, I think it was just basically they matched them toe to toe, and I think it's actually something that I've been thinking about the last couple of weeks as well, is like a growing concern for Atletico's midfield. Saul, I think, has been not poor per se, but definitely not the destroyer, the Paul Pogba-esque marauding central midfielder that he once was.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly is behind that. Obviously, the lack of Koke is definitely something, but Michel played Comesaña and Mario Suarez, who Atletico fans will know, at the base of midfield, and they just kind of controlled him a little bit from there, and then and then got it forward to Raul de Tomas. Just lacked that little bit of composure and a little bit of stroke of luck, I suppose, too. I think Atletico's midfield weren't as strong and creative as strong as they would hope that they would be, you know, against a midfield, especially like Rayo, a young Comesaña and an old Mario Suarez, who hasn't actually started the game until Saturday.
Yeah, Mario was very good too, and I like Comesaña, having watched him a little bit this year. Those are just two tough midfielders to get around. Saul's form has been something we haven't talked about a whole lot on the pod this year, but it's been really up and down.
It hasn't been mentioned at all, really, and he's kind of just gone under the radar. And I heard, I don't know what brought it to my attention, but I was just looking at him on Saturday, and I was kind of like, He's avoiding criticism. No one's really saying anything, but it is worrying for Atletico. I know that. I think that maybe it's just the fact that Atletico's performances just get dumped into the category of being boring, and they just assume that everyone just levels out a little bit, you know, and it's not really a great sign. And I think that means A, the players are able to get by when they're not playing that well, and also B, that players don't actually ever play really, really that well, like, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, everything is kind of... Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that Atletico, there's this narrative about them, which is not entirely incorrect, that it's very pragmatic, very boring, and everyone kind of does their jobs and does them well enough. So we don't often see comments about, like, oh, this player is in particularly good form, this player is in particularly bad form. Like, other than Griezmann, that just doesn't really apply.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's really not great, especially at this stage in Simeone's tenure, especially considering the fact that they should be challenging on all fronts. Gone out of the Copa del Rey, the league title gone to the wayside. And I mean, that's what I wrote in that article, is that this is, I think, one of the biggest games of Simeone's career at Atletico. Not biggest as in it will have the most... Not even maybe consequences, but it'll be the most divisive game, I think, because I was just saying, like, those Champions League finals, Atletico had won even before that they played those games, because they weren't expected to get there. Like, they had already won a certain amount of respect. It was, they were going in as massive underdogs throughout the tournament. They'd already achieved something almost unthinkable in those two finals, and it was just a matter of, if they won, it would have been just another string on their bow. But if they had a lost, it would have been, it was just, listen, what an achievement anyway. Whereas this is a last 16 game. If Atletico lose this, they've got 2 to 3 months of a season left with nothing to play for.
Yeah.
And it's something that's, I mean, and they had made no secret about getting to the final. That they wanted to get to the final. They wanted to play the final in their home stadium, and they went out in the summer and paid the kind of money that teams that are ambitious spend, doubled down on that in January by moving all sorts of chess pieces around the board to get Morata. And if they get knocked out now in the last 16, I mean, and there's no Europa League to fall back on now, it could be disastrous for Atletico if they don't win this.
Yeah, the Juve tie, this is it. This is where the season is going to be decided, whether it's, I wouldn't say a failure, but whether it's a step back, or whether it's, you know, it's a step toward one of the most famous seasons in the club's history. The Juve tie is everything. And that's why this Rio game was just a little, I don't know if it was disconcerting or not, but it was a little unsettling, particularly without Koke in midfield to kind of hold everything together. We've talked about Koke before. What is it about him, Robbie, where he's out and Atletico just don't play well at all?
Well, I suppose it's the reason that Simeone loves him so much. He offers that balance. He offers that control. He offers that hard work. He offers, I suppose, he's an insurance policy for the midfielders. He frees up Saul. He frees up Tomas when he plays. And that's part of the reason why Saul probably hasn't been himself since Koke has been out. Koke is going to be back on Wednesday, it looks like. So we should see an entirely different Atletico. But also the fact that Rayo were underdogs, and Atletico don't really kind of... Those are the kind of games that they don't really like to play in. Whereas Juventus are going to come out and attack, and it might be Atletico back to their old selves, the kind of game where they're comfortable in. They're going in as underdogs. They're going in with their backs to the wall. They're going to play counter-attacking football, and that might actually improve them. The better the side, the better they play, and the more at home they are. So, yeah, I think that's what Koke offers, and I think that's what he's going to offer. And you can criticise Koke all you like, and he does receive some criticism as to he hasn't developed as some people like. But Simeone, he's his number one guy. He's Simeone on the field, and I think that is something that they're missing at the moment.
You never really notice him when he's there, but you really notice him when he's not. And that's, That's why he's just so important to this club. And luckily, he will be back on Wednesday. We'll see how well he holds that midfield together. We'll talk about that in a sec. You mentioned Oblak earlier, and this is his 80th clean sheet with Atletico. Almost as many as he's conceded goals, 84. That's just an incredible statistic. Five of Rio's six shots in the box were saved by Oblak. Was this one of his best performances of the season? One of his most important?
Yeah, it was actually kind of strange, because when I was at the game, and I didn't actually... It's the kind of thing, you know, the way everything's happening around you, and I wasn't there as press, I was there as a fan. So I wasn't really, like, paying attention, taking notes or anything like that. So, and I came home, and I went straight into work, and they were saying, Oblak the hero. And I was thinking, I was like, he was, wasn't he? And it wasn't something that dawned on me at the time, but then I was looking back, and I was like, he really saved their bacon there. And... some of those saves were fabulous, and as you said, those shots that they got away in the box, and as I was saying, that's not very Atletico-esque. Is Oblak saving them now, or is it the case that the defence is still as good as it ever was, or like, we're going to find out on Wednesday. I mean, this game on Wednesday I don't think can be understated, yeah, Oblak's just in absolutely amazing form, and he's one of the best. And it's not really, it's kind of weird that we say he's one of the best in the world, and yet I still think he's slightly underrated.
Oh, he is. And he makes everything just look so easy.
Yeah.
He really does. It's the way he catches the ball and the way he secures the ball. That Baugh header in near stoppage time, I thought that was a sure goal, but he just leapt over, grabbed it, went straight down, made it look easy.
Yeah, yeah. Fabulous reflexes.
Yep.
He's, I don't know what the metrics or the measurements are for this, but his reflexes are so good. The shot is away, and the headers and shots are away, and he's looking at it, and he waits till the last second. He doesn't wait until the last second. He doesn't spot it maybe till the last, and he's still able to get across. I mean, the amount of surefire goals he saves is just incredible.
And this is why we look at some the expected goals numbers, and this is why expected goals don't particularly like Atletico. Those statistics don't particularly like Atletico because Oblak saves them so much. They do concede dangerous opportunities more and more over the last couple seasons, but Oblak is just about always there to shut the door when it's needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, it's not a criticism. It's like, oh, they're relying on their goalkeeper. That's what he's there for. That's what that's what you have a world. That's what your scouting department is there for, to sign the best in the world. But I'm just wondering if he is the very, very, very last line of defense, and if it is him that's saving us. If he has an off day, what's it going to look like against Juventus? Against like a volume shooter like Ronaldo.
Yeah, it won't be pretty. If he's off in that tie, it won't be pretty, but he is in very, very good form right now. And like you said, I think the Juve tie, we'll see. It'll be a different Atletico, particularly with Koke back out there, with Diego Costa back in the team. We'll talk about him in a second. Antoine Griezmann scored the only goal in this game, and he's up to 12 now in La Liga, which is six times more than anybody else has in this team, which is incredible. What is the degree of Griezmann dependencia, as it were, in this team now? Are they more reliant on him than ever?
Yeah, I suppose it is astonishing at that statistic, but it's also kind of sad as well in that Saúl isn't chipping in really. As I said, the Lamar hasn't scored. I'm not entirely sure if he was a goal scorer at Monaco, but he hasn't scored. Morata said, I think it was after the game, he said he's been unlucky, and I do agree with that in the sense that he should have had a penalty at Betis, should have had a penalty and a goal maybe against Real Madrid. That penalty call on Casemiro, or non-call, just still baffles me. And the goal may or may not have been offside. We won't get into that. It's just a marginal call, but like, he has been unlucky, and I wonder if Simeone appreciates the fact that it's too dependent on Griezmann, and like we said, that's what he's there for. He's their talisman. That's what he's there to get goals. But it would be handy if someone else would chip in with goals. But again, if he has an off day, and well, then what happens? So, and it's kind of interesting to see in that. Morata and Costa had never played with each other before until Saturday, and they played with each other, and I thought they actually looked okay. I'm not entirely sure if Simeone will go for that, because it means if he starts with that, it means he has nowhere to go after that, if you get me. Mm-hmm. Like that would be a good plan B if you're throwing your, the kitchen sink at it. But I think it might work in that, well, just by the sheer fact of having an extra goal scorer on the field, Griezmann behind them to open, they'll open up spaces for him. It might be a little bit handier, maybe easier for him. And then you can play Koke on the wing in order to Koke and Griezmann on either wing, to Koke to kind of tuck in when needed, and then to offer that balance and a little bit of creativity moving forward. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, I thought they looked okay on Saturday. And the Griezmann thing is, they're relying massively on him at the moment, but he seems to be enjoying it too. That role as the talisman, that's why he stayed at Atletico, to be that guy.
Yeah, he's not shying away from it, and his goal scoring form right now is particularly since the turn of the year, it was a lot like last year when he just turned it on the second half of the season, helped carry Atletico to silverware. We might see the same thing this season. You mentioned Costa and Morata together. That's a potentially lethal trio. We have something coming out on this later today on the site, but how do you see that working, particularly if Griezmann does go to the wing?
Yeah, as I said, it's if he does start with Griezmann and Morata and Costa up front, that's it. He's pushed all his chips onto the table, and there's no switch up after that. It does seem like an excessive measure before you kind of see what's happening, and I can't imagine Simeone is the kind of manager who's just going to throw all his chips in at the very start. He's going to, especially at the Wanda, he's going to maybe try to see what happens, see how it develops, see maybe if Costa or Morata, I would imagine, will start. If he starts on his own, he'll see how that works out. And then if that's not working, that's when you throw the two lads on. But also, like, the fact that I'm not entirely sure what formation Juve play, but it would be handy to have their two centre, because obviously they're known for their like Chiellini is brilliant, Bonucci is really good. It would be handy to have those two occupied by the likes of Costa, who is, as Simeone said, he transmits fear, and he just brings that fear. Having them to worry about Costa, having them to worry about Morata, and then Griezmann kind of sneaking in around those kind of open spaces to create chances might work, but I can't imagine Simeone will push all his chips in from the very start.
No, that would be very out of character. That's something we could see in the second leg, particularly if Atletico concede. But yeah, I can't see it happening. We're probably going to see a very conservative 4-4-2, all four central midfielders. But we can get into that in a second. You mentioned Costa transmitting fear, and that's something that Cholo loves to say, that Costa does that. He's like the battering ram that frees up Griezmann and potentially Morata if it comes to that. Do you believe Costa still transmits that fear, or is that line kind of overplayed considering his form this season and his injuries?
Yeah, definitely. I think he does. I think I was reading in one of the papers the other day is that foot injury really, really, really was holding him back. I'm not sure if he is on a fairly steep decline, a fairly steady decline or not. I think that foot injury was really upsetting him and something that wasn't allowing him to play. He's still only 30, like, he's young as a footballer. Like, he still has another maybe 2 or 3 years left. I understand that it's different for different players, and especially players with hamstring injuries and that kind of twitchy, fast twitch kind of footballer, decline quicker. But, I'm not sure. He came on and I thought he played well against Rayo. He was that same. He had a bit of a fight with, Matt, I think it was. He kind of got into it with him automatically. And I think, I suppose, then it just turns into changing your expectations of what you expect from him. If all you want him to do is to transmit that fear, run into the channels, be a decoy, and let Griezmann pick up the pieces, then that's fine. But if you're expecting them to score 30 goals a season, I'm not sure that Diego Costa is still around. But definitely in terms of transmitting fear and being that kind of nuisance thorn in the side, I think he definitely still has a role to play.
I would agree with that. And maybe it doesn't make him the happiest. He wants to score goals. He wants to be the guy to score all the goals. But that's just not really feasible in this team anymore with the way it's set up, with how Griezmann has developed into the talisman, as you said. It's not all that feasible anymore. That being said, I think he still is essential in that. He does transmit that fear, and he has that quality, that fighting spirit about him. That is a throwback to the old days when Atletico had all these warriors. You had Gabi, Raul Garcia, Thiago, Arda Turan to separate degrees. He's a throwback to the old days, and that kind of streetwise mentality that Atleti still need in the biggest games.
Yeah, especially when it's in the last few minutes, like, and when the game is close, he definitely brings something to the table. But as you said, I'm not entirely sure if over the course of a season, is how many goals he's going to score and how happy he will be in that role. I'm not entirely sure, but I suppose we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Anything else from this game before we move on to Juve?
No, not really. I think that was it. I think it was a surprise to see Morata and Costa up front together. When I saw Costa coming on, I figured that was it for Morata for the day, just because they were probably thought they were thinking about resting him and get Costa some minutes on his own up there. But put the two of them on, it was bold, it was new, it was really interesting from Simeone, and I hope to see that over maybe not on the first leg at the Wanda, but definitely in Turin I'd say we'll see some of that, obviously, as I said, depending on how the game goes.
You think Rayo stay up?
That Iago Aspas injury is massive for Celta. I definitely think that there's three worse teams in the division than them, but I'm not entirely sure if Rayo have the belief in themselves, maybe the willingness to go on and win the games that matter, because they've lost a couple of games, like against Leganés. They were up 2-0 against Real Sociedad, lost that. They were up 1-0 against Espanyol, lost that. That just doesn't bode well for a relegation battle. Coming out on the right side of a relegation battle, but loads of games left, and I think they've definitely improved to the point where a couple of those games could swing in their direction. They're by no means a lost cause, I would say that.
No, I think they can scrape it with Iago Aspas out another, what is it, 6 weeks?
I think it looks, yeah, there's not the definitive time, but it looks like it is a significant time, yeah.
Ugh, that's really awful for Celta. With just the race as tight as it is, really one or two results toward the end of the season, that's going to make the difference. I think Rayo can stay up. They might just about scrape it. But I think they can do it. They look good Saturday, and they played Atletico well both their games this season, just lost them both 1-0.
Same with Real Madrid. They lost 1-0, really, really tight game. Lost at the Wanda, 1-0, really, really tight game. Lost to Barcelona in Vallecas, 2-1 up at the last few minutes. Oh, some of those results, if they do go down, it will be one. They'll be looking back at some of those games thinking, what if? But, definitely playing solid enough football to stay up, I think. And there is three worse teams. And if the likes of Valladolid, for example, go on a poor run, if Celta continue on their poor streak, a change of manager that doesn't work out for one or two teams, and all of a sudden, once you get down there, it's so difficult to get out, because which is what's happening to Rayo right now, every single game is do or die. And just getting your head above the water, you can actually breathe for a week and think, okay, a point in the next game or three, we can separate ourselves further. But when you're down there, it's just you're relying on other teams to mess up, and that's when it becomes problematic, I think. And I don't know. Nervous, but listen, Rayo, their home probably is the Segunda, but and if Rayo fans aren't, okay, they definitely want to be in Primera, but if they do go down, it's all the same. They'll still be there supporting anyway, so let's see.
Yeah, you have to love that support base that Rayo have. They were chanting against the Frente during this game. Get out of our neighborhood.
It's a Scarpe song. Scarpe are kind of a ska band from Vallecas, and todos los fachos fuera de mi barrio, and they sing that all the time. But that last line, they had somewhere to direct it to, and some of the Frente fans were doing some signs and signals, or some unsavory behavior, I'll say.
Which isn't too surprising considering their history.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears now to the Champions League. Juventus, we've talked about it a little bit over the course of this episode, but Robbie, I think I have to agree with you. This is arguably the biggest two games of Cholo's tenure at Atletico. I mean, maybe not counting those Champions League finals, but everything that this tie boils down to, the season boils down to this 180 minutes or possibly longer, knowing Atleti. It could go more than 180 minutes, which will just put everyone on pins and needles. Do you expect a really defensive battle, or can you see a lot of goals in this tie?
I'd say it's going to be really defensive from Atletico. It's that kind of nervousness that will probably creep into it, because they do know how important it is. I was surprised that Simeone signed the new deal when he did, and I saw the Barcelona deal with Valverde is, I saw it reported that they did that, and they do these kinds of things as a form of aesthetics to kind of give the team and the club a boost before a game, and to kind of give the manager their backing, and it just relieves pressure. It gives the impression that it's a long-term project they're working on. It's not just about this game. And I think maybe the same as with Simeone, and I don't think he needed that kind of backing from the club. I think it does kind of suggest that, listen, regardless of what happens here, there's still life in this project left. But I do think that, as I said, with La Liga gone, pretty much, basically, with La Liga gone out of the Copa, if Atletico get knocked out in the last 16, they have the second legs in March. So April and May, you've got a couple of months of just kind of pointless league games where you're just trying to make sure that you don't drop out of the top four, and you're kind of half-heartedly chasing Barcelona. I mean, it's going to be a long, long, long 2 months if they do get knocked out of this last 16, and there'll be a lot of questions asked. Even though it is a really, really tough draw, it's not like, say, Barcelona last year, who got knocked out by Roma. Everyone expected them to win. It was just an absolute bolt out of the blue. The Juventus game, Atletico are they are underdogs for this. So many expect them to get knocked out. It'll still be a last 16 knockout, regardless of who you played. It'll be on the page as a last 16 knockout, and that is something that, after especially the embarrassment of last season's elimination in the group stages, I'm not entirely sure, where you go from there.
Yeah, it's not much better. It's just advancing to two more games. It's really, you'd almost rather be in Europa League in some instances.
And to have something to play for, opposed to getting the last 16 where, the quarterfinals, not to be disrespectful or anything, but the quarterfinals is when it gets really, really serious, you think, maybe even the semifinals. And to get knocked out in the last 16, I don't think it's going to look well. And you wonder then what, especially with the Wanda, with the final being in the Wanda Metropolitano in June, it's going to be fairly heartbreaking for them, seeing as they didn't make any secret about wanting to be in the final either. They were like, this is our goal this season, and that's pretty much it. And to get knocked out in the last 16, it's going to be quite embarrassing. Some of those quotes might come back to haunt them.
Yeah, it would be a very bitter pill to swallow. 538 has it pretty close, 54% for Juve, 46% for Atletico. And they give Atletico a 73% chance to either win or draw the first leg at home. Those are pretty decent odds. You mentioned earlier the possession battle. I think this could be interesting. I'm not convinced Juve will have 65, 70, 75% possession. They could give Atletico the ball. These are two pretty similar teams. They both kind of play a pragmatic style. Juve have a big lead in Serie A, but it hasn't always been super dominant.
Yeah. Yeah, and as I said, I don't watch enough of Serie A, but I do keep an eye on it, and I know that there was talk of a kind of like a mini crisis there recently, which is a little bit ridiculous. Very, jumping the gun, but yeah, I just wonder how good they are too. Like I saw them against United. Like some of these games that they played in, were they that convincing? I'm not entirely sure. Like the Ronaldo signing, like we were saying about narrative and then how things are framed. The signing of Ronaldo also gave them a new sheen, a new reputation. But have they improved that much? I'm not very sure. And Atletico, given their spending in the summer, and then the signing of Morata, maybe they can go head to toe with them. It's gonna. Yeah, I think 538 have it right. Obviously, it's gonna be really, really tight.
It's gonna be stressful, but it's also gonna be exciting. And stressful also because Cristiano Ronaldo is there now, and Atletico can just never ever avoid him. Will this year be different? Will they finally be able to shut him down?
It's gonna take a massive effort. And it depends then on who plays on the right-hand side. It's going to be Arias. And then who plays on the right? Correa? Like, I mean, is Simeone going to trust him with his defensive? Or is he going to play Correa in the hope that he distracts? It's Alexandro that plays on the left and then with them, yeah. And then is he going to try and maybe force Ronaldo to look backwards a little bit and bet on that? I really don't know.
Well, it looks like Juan Fran and Arias, that's a race. That's a toss-up for Wednesday, based on what I've read. We already kind of know that the central midfield four, it is going to be what it is. Lucas is not going to play because of his knee sprain. That's just really terrible timing. And Costa could come off the bench again. So Cholo still has a lot to decide and a lot to sort out in the next little over 48 hours here.
It's kind of weird that he would you trust Juan Fran versus Ronaldo?
I don't think I would, although remember last year he did outpace him in a Madrid derby.
I don't know. I think he's going to need help either way, or whoever's playing there is going to need help, I'm just not sure how it's going to work out. It's going to be massive. That battle in particular.
Yeah, that's arguably the decisive battle in this tie is who's going to try to tame Cristiano a little bit.
Yeah, because that's what they're betting on as well. That's where they signed him, and he absolutely loves this point in the season. He loves the Champions League. He's going to absolutely relish the chance to play against Madrid or come back to Madrid again. He feels like he was kind of maybe run out of Spain a little bit with the tax stuff, and he doesn't feel like he was treated very fairly, and he's going to absolutely love coming back and playing at the Wanda again and getting the chance to show Real Madrid what they lost with him as well, and these are the kind of games that he absolutely loves and always shows up for almost.
Oh boy, it's gonna be interesting to watch. As there's never a dull moment at Atletico, even though it may look dull. There really is never a dull moment here. You got a scoreline prediction?
I'll go 1-0 in the first half or first leg, Atletico.
I'm going with the same thing. I think conceding an away goal would be devastating, and I think Atletico have got to keep a clean sheet in this first leg.
Yeah, I think they know that, and I think also like a lot of Juventus' games have been really tight, like 1-0s and things like that, and I think Atletico are maybe the perfectly suited team to shut them down and to frustrate them, so it's going to be close. I don't think there's going to be a lot of goals at all, so yeah, it's let's see.
Well, on that note, Robbie, I think we are just about done here. Thank you so much for joining me as ever.
No problem. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, Jeremy.
Follow Robbie on Twitter at RobbieJDunn. Follow me on Twitter at JBBaron. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. And you can like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/Into the Calderon. subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of this program on your favorite podcasting platform, including Apple Podcasts. And make sure to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat, where you can become a Colt Gennaro Chat amigo, get access to bonus pods. We're going to have a fresh bonus pod up on Wednesday after the first leg against Juventus, so be on the lookout for that. patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat. We'll talk to you later this week. Until then, adios.